This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
It's hour four of the nation. Oh, man, the Houston Astros cheating story got even bigger today. We'll get you the very latest on that. Plus, there is some Cowboys breaking news. It's Mavs game night. So much is going on here in the world of sports. General at your service. See me, bear me, N.A., that Heineken 0.0, if you don't mind. Jeff Cavanaugh, Mike Bassick, Lucius Alexander, along with you. We are the G-Bag Nation. We're actually going to start, though, with the latest on the Nolan Arenado trade possibility.
Good. I hope there's better than the latest I saw like yesterday or whatever.
Yeah, the story today with John Morosi, maybe this was late last night. He adds the Rockies' desire to get a package that contains both big league and minor league talent in exchange for the star third baseman. And they have exchanged proposals with the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah, that's what I saw. The Cardinals are it's interesting. I talked about this a few days ago when the Cardinals made a trade with the Tampa Bay Rays, I believe if I have my teams right. I know it was the Cardinals. And they're like, oh, this opens up for Nolan Arenado. And I'm like, man, it doesn't make a lot of sense unless you're adding that big-time prospect. They got the pitching prospect from the Rays to then send to Colorado, almost like a three-team trade, but they weren't willing, or Colorado wasn't willing to get into it yet. But they're like, well, we like this trade anyways. Let's get rid of two righty outfielders. Let's get the prospect catcher and the prospect pitcher, and it adds to our prospect list to maybe go get Nolan Arenado.
Yeah, apparently the Rockies want a big stud pitching prospect for the Cardinals, Dakota Hudson. I don't know if the Rangers have any pitchers that good.
We really don't. I mean, Hans Kraus has I think people like him, but if I'm another team, I'm like, hey, I like him too. I'd also like if he could actually be healthy. So because of that, you can't say Hans Kraus. I'm like, well, we did it. Here's Nolan Arenado. Since you added him into the deal, I'd be like, that's nice. But man, he's a ways off and he gets hurt a lot. So how can I – the Rangers just have an issue with injuries, whether it's luck or whatever they're doing. It's just not good with their pitchers. They seem to the good ones get hurt or just not develop in what they think they're going to develop into. So if I'm the Rockies, I just can't look at the Rangers pitching staff at the minor league level, their prospects, and go – yeah, that's the team we need to pluck from.
All right, so that in the not good news department. But these things, they come and go. They ebb and flow as trades are approaching.
I wonder if the Rangers are willing to include, like, Josh Young in a Nolan Arenado.
They should.
I would too, but we don't know. If Colorado cares about that, wants that. But we're like, look, he was the eighth overall pick, third baseman, should be ready in 2021 or 22. We start with that. How does that sound? And I'm wondering if Colorado's interested, or if Colorado asks about Josh Young and immediately the Rangers are like, no, we're not trading him.
And if that's not enough, be like, well, here's the good news. We drafted another one in the second round. We'll give you both.
Okay, the Astros cheating scandal became an even bigger story today, I think, because we found out a ton of teams from around Major League Baseball are really offended by what Major League Baseball and the Astros have done here as far as the punishment go. Other owners say Rob Manfred told them to be quiet about it. So it's very clear now the commissioner and the league working with the Astros to kind of give enough punishment to satisfy the public, but to also make the story go away. So it is very, very complicated, but there are a lot of people who were victimized by this, and they're starting to express, and you know, they're not in a position to let this go away easily at all. I mean, this is a massive cheating scandal.
I wonder if they're like, what are you going to do, fine us $5 million for talking about it? Because that's the max. So I get that Rob Manfred, there's rules in place. He couldn't do more than $5 million, and we think that's a pretty small amount for what happened to the owner to get penalized.
Yeah.
I wonder what the owners wanted more done, right? We haven't heard specifics because an owner hasn't come out and said, specifically, I wanted them to lose all their draft picks, or I wanted them to be able to sign no international players for 2 years. Like, hey, not only do you lose the first and second round picks where you can draft pretty much, you know, Canadian, American players, I guess Puerto Rican players too. You can't go get Latin players. You can't go get Asian players. You have 2 years of, we're sorry, you can't add from Latin America or Asia to your organization either. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I wonder what the owners would have been satisfied with.
Yeah, you know, and then you have to look at, if you're Major League Baseball, what would satisfy you compared to what would be too much, that now it's bad for the game, it's bad for our overall income. I don't think they're actually considering this is going to be something that could crush MLB as a popular sport.
No, you know? I don't think so either.
So they don't have to look at it like, if our punishment isn't big enough, the fans will turn their back on our league, right? It's more what's in good taste.
It's almost in the cheating things that would really, I think, turn us off as fans of that sport, is if we found out somebody intentionally lost. I think that would, I'm throwing this out, my opinion would be, if we found out that the Dodgers were so mad at their ownership for doing something that they decided to throw the seventh game of the World Series. They got so mad at the owner coming in and saying something, they're like, then fine, we're not going to play hard in game seven. We're going to intentionally lose, so Houston automatically wins. I think that would hurt the fan base of just a fan of a sport more than somebody going, we cheated as hard as we could to win.
Yeah. At least you're trying your hardest, and it was just the bad guys from other cities who cheated you out of it. But if your players intentionally threw the game, that might erode confidence significantly.
And I think it's tough for Rob Manfred, because if he's telling the owners to be quiet, hey, guess what? Next week, you're going to have to do this all over again with a way more popular team than the Houston Astros, who only – guess who cares about the Houston Astros? People in Houston, and that's it. And I'm not taking a shot at you, Houston Astro fans. Guess what?
Same
for
with
the Texas Rangers. Yeah. The only people that care about the Texas Rangers are people in Dallas-Fort Worth. Boston Red Sox have that national fan base. And so I'm just wondering, when next week, I assume, they're going to suspend Alex Cora for a long time and hit them with pretty much the same penalties.
Yeah.
What owners are going to say about just giving the same penalty out to the Boston Red Sox.
So, you know, what do you do if you're a non-cheating organization? You're meeting today and deciding, how do we want to handle this? Because Major League Baseball knows it wasn't isolated to these two situations.
Right.
And they don't want to get into a tattletale fest with every team telling on each other and half the league in trouble for this. So they're trying to keep it quiet. Yeah. But you feel like you were wronged. I want something. I need some sort of a payoff.
Especially if you were a playoff team in those years. You're just like, look, the Astros screwed us out of going to the World Series or winning the division or whatever it was. Obviously, for the Dodgers, winning the World Series, you feel like, hey, there has to be more to this, because they stole what we've been fighting for really since, like, whenever you fell in love with baseball and when you discovered there was Major League Baseball and the ultimate goal was to win the championship. And the Astros did something that just became a major advantage. And so did the Boston Red Sox. And so, and you look at it too, and for baseball, for it to help out, you almost wish that you would find out that over the last couple of years, the Kansas City Royals were doing it. So you're like, all right, like, crappy teams did it and it didn't end up winning big time. But you the only two teams we know about, the only two teams we can find out about, what happened when they discovered how to give the pitches to the hitters. And so they had won the championship.
It turns out it goes pretty well if you know what's coming.
Yeah, if you have a good team, you can turn them into the best team if you can say what the other team is pitching.
And now the victims are really countless. Buster only did a story, the five biggest victims of the Astros cheating. Number one is the credibility of recent baseball history. And yeah, you know, that's kind of an abstract. I like number two a lot better.
Okay.
Aaron Judge finished second to Altuve in the 2017 MVP balloting. We'll never know how the cheating affected Judge, who could have won MVP in his rookie season. Clayton Kershaw gave up a big lead in Game 5 of the 2017 World Series. Dodgers win that day. They win the series. Kershaw's postseason record and legacy would be completely different. How about all the pitchers Houston pounded that summer with the aid of the sign stealing? Who lost an evaluation, an opportunity? We'll never know stuff like that. How about Dave Roberts, the Dodgers manager? The
almost
criticism.
Got fired this year.
So all of the, what about Joe Girardi? The Yankees moved on from him for reasons other than the loss in the 2017 AL Championship Series. But if New York had beaten the Astros and won the World Series, how's Hal Steinbrenner look at that?
Yeah, he's still the manager of the New York Yankees today. I wonder if we'll ever know this, the full report. You know how we got the full report on steroids? How they gave us, like, the book, and then they weren't supposed to give names, and then we kind of found out the names of the guys that they had tested positive when it was supposed to be, like, a test that was anonymous. I wonder if we'll ever find out, because when it comes to Jose Altuve and what he did in that regular season, how many times was Jose Altuve up to bat that you guys watched video? Like, did they really scan over every game in 2017 and go, holy cow, Jose Altuve, 50% of his at-bats in that year, we were hearing a banging noise or a whistling noise from the microphones getting picked up. So, like, I'd love to know, like, how much did they discover in the game that Kershaw gave up all those runs in the World Series in Houston, did they discover that the Houston Astros were able to somehow, some way get the signs to the hitters what was coming?
Yeah. And, you know, a sad thing about this, I think, from their perspective, is they were tireless in using legal methods to get tips. You know, so a lot of that stuff's going to get lumped in with the cheating. When you just look at the raw numbers, all of it's going to be, look how they cheated for it. But a lot of it was good, honest work to try to figure out the pitches. Either way, nobody's going to have sympathy for them. How about Mike Fiers, number three, the biggest victims of the Astros cheating? He told on him.
Fiers.
Now he's got to spend the rest of his career getting heckled by players and being considered a snitch for kind of doing the right thing.
He's the Snowden of baseball.
He is.
I don't think that. I hope he doesn't get treated wrong on this.
It's hard to say.
He shouldn't be, but you never know. I mean, because we don't know how many teams are cheating, right?
Yeah.
What if there's 14 of them or 20 of them, and they're like, hey, dude, what if the team he's on is one of them? You're like, hey. You
know, it's interesting because with so much player movement, that's why it made it so hard for them to think that they wouldn't get caught. That you're going to have somebody who wasn't happy with the situation and then you moved on from them. And they have to tell the other team, because if I was on the Rangers, and that was my dream come true when I was there for just a few weeks, but if I was on the Rangers and we were doing that, and then the next year I was on, let's just say, the Astros, I would say, hey, guys, when we go to the ballpark in Arlington, or at that time it was Ameriquest Field, guys, they cheat over there. I was on it. We cheat. We do this. So just to let us know so we can win this series, I want to beat them.
Yeah.
They cheat.
Uh-huh. I'd do that immediately.
Yeah.
That's line one. It's time to beat them and get that exposed. I think that goes to when you're involved in something and a bunch of people are acting like it's no big deal, it's easy to go along with it, right? It's like that pack mentality. And if you just remove yourself from it and get a little bit distant, you're like, what were we all normalizing in there? How did we all think that this was okay?
I don't think this is true, but the rumor always was at the ballpark in Arlington / whatever you want to call it, that they had somebody up in those suites behind home plate. Sorry, not behind home plate, behind center field, you know, you have the office buildings. And because Mark Burley was like, I swear they did this, and other players felt like they did this, like that the Rangers had somebody up there doing something. Yeah, to kind of give the signs from up there. But I have no clue. I never discovered that was true. But other teams felt like, because of the setup at the ballpark,
sure, I could see that suspicion.
The Rangers had a perfect way to put somebody up in those areas to relay signs.
They were hitting a lot of bombs. Yeah. a lot of home runs.
But yeah, I mean, that would be something. Yeah,
I would do it. You know, I could totally see myself getting caught up in it. Not only is it the competitiveness and the thrill of kind of cheating like that, but also it's big money. I have a chance to help my teammates earn millions of dollars, you know, so it's kind of like a heist as well.
Yeah, I will say there is a group of Facebook members that are former professional baseball players. So it's filled with minor leaguers and major leaguers.
Get me up in there.
And that there is a guy who played a long time and coached a long time that was saying, I wonder what he admitted to it. He's like, we used to film the third base coaches on all the teams that we were playing. And he would then, after the game was over, go back and study the game of just the third base coach when he's giving signs to the hitter to try to figure out what's their steal sign, what's their hit and run sign. You know, now it doesn't matter because nobody's bunting, hit and running, and stealing, so it doesn't really matter. But back in the day when the game was played where you'd do stuff like that, they'd say, yeah, they would film the third base coach and then go over and see if they could steal the signs. Do you feel like that is any type of I don't think that that's on the same level as videotaping the catcher signs and immediately relaying them through the dugout.
No, you know, trying to get some advantage studying third baseman and feeling like, man, at some point in the game, I'm going to know that he's putting a steal on or he's calling a steal off, and maybe I'll get an opportunity once a game or once a series to implement that. It's still cheating, and I don't think it's approved of, but it's like 1/100th of what the Astros and Red Sox did. Offseason needs for all 32 teams, including the Cowboy, who was talking glory hole on Fox Sports today. We got to get into that storyline as well right here. Yeah, we have a Cowboy talking about big dreams for next year. Welcome back. G-Bag Nation, hope you're having a good one. Let's talk off-season needs for the Cowboys. Pro Football Focus ranked the needs for all 32 teams. I'll give you what they say about the Cowboys, but also your division rivals here, what their off-season needs are. We got to get to what Xavier Woods was talking about today with Fox Sports 1. He went on that Undisputed show this morning.
There's his first mistake.
Had quite a bit to say. Yeah, okay. You think Orlando Scandrick advised it? No, dude, this will be good for you. Come on over, talk to my buddies.
Probably.
Segments brought to you by mycomputercareer.edu, by Nutrisystem, and by the Frankels. If you're hurt in an accident, it's not your fault. Call the office of Frankel and Frankel, 214-333-3333, or go online there to frankelfirm.com. Yeah, he called Garrett the scapegoat in an appearance on FS1's Undisputed on Tuesday morning. It's on us. It is on the players. I think this is a I like it, right? You are accepting responsibility, extreme accountability. I think that's a good concept and all that. But listen, no matter how bad the players play, the coaches could always get them to play better, especially if they're playing bad and they're not hitting their expectations. Sure, sometimes players make horrible decisions, but I tell you what, the best coaches have a way of talking to them, inspiring them, leading them, guiding them, so bad decisions are less frequent. So putting the team as the number one priority instead of other stuff as the number one priority, and those sort of daily accountability lessons that the great coaches can give while also respecting that these guys are men and deserve to be respected as adults who are capable of governing and managing themselves, and that's fine. But whenever somebody says, oh, the players weren't good enough, or, hey, it's all on me, well, sure, you did your part. But every time a player fails, I think it's either a careless coach behind them or an untalented coach behind them, an egotistical coach behind them. Every day, there's a chance to reinvent, reestablish your mindset, your energy level, your care, your sense of urgency about the product that you're putting out there on game days. And the person who's primarily tasked with having you in the proper mindset to prepare and then execute is that coach. So I appreciate Xavier Woods saying that's on us and everything, and Jason Garrett, the scapegoat. You want to have your leaders back, even if he totally sucks. You know, nothing wrong with that, but I'm not buying it.
I mean, there's been scapegoats during the Garrett era.
Absolutely.
That he's used to say, it's not my fault. It's all these assistants. Let's keep firing all these assistants and keep turning them over. But
Derek Dooley, that guy's got to go.
You can call him whatever you want, but he had to go. Whether he's the scapegoat or not, like, there's a way to stop from having a scapegoat, and that's to win more football games.
Yeah.
And you guys were equipped talent-wise to do that for sure.
Yeah.
So you could say that, hey, none of us were good enough, and, well, the bad news is that that means you guys aren't good enough at motivating yourselves, but I can't replace all of you. I can replace one of him.
Yes. Let's get some Coach O energy going on in there. He also said the Cowboys do have all the talent they need to reach the Super Bowl for the first time since 95. According to Woods, the Cowboys had all the talent they needed in 2019, but couldn't put it together. Something I believe they're going to be regretting for the rest of their careers. I don't think the Cowboys are going to win a Super Bowl this decade. I thought they would at the start of last decade. I'm not making that mistake again. Mike McCarthy, who won a Super Bowl with the Packers, is now being charged with getting the Cowboys where they haven't gone the past 24 seasons.
Oh, I thought I'd get arrested.
Woods says, new energy breeds something different, and he's won before. I like that from Xavier. That's exactly what's going to happen. You're a little bit unsure. You have to do a little bit more to impress. It's the worst part about getting a new boss in radio. Luckily, we haven't had one in a while. It's like, crap. Now I got to, you know, try to impress. And I think whatever line of work you're in, that goes a long way towards increasing productivity and proficiency and efficiency when you get a new boss, unless he's a complete idiot.
I think that's my biggest thing about the Cowboys that I feel like I'm most confident in. Is we can talk about the things that Mike McCarthy says that we think are right or wrong, or how much of it is actually going to be followed through on, and how much did you really learn while you were away from the game. But I feel like the new leader, new energy part, I'm confident in.
Yes.
That now there's a lot of guys where if you were a Garrett guy, you have to earn it all over again. You know, you're going to have almost a whole new coaching staff that you're going to have to earn it from. You're not going to have a bunch of guys that, well, we show up in camp and here's the guys who are going to play and all right, let's go play. Go earn it again.
And I totally agree with you. My only issue is why wait until this year? I mean, you could have done it last year and really had 2 years under the salary cap. The salary cap's about to put its thumb on you and be like, get down there.
They went to the playoffs, Gavin. They were on the right track. What are you, crazy? They won a playoff game.
Yes.
They were right there.
But Woods was asked if he has any bold predictions and said, quote, we'll be in the Super Bowl.
Yes.
I don't know where it is next year, but we will be there.
I don't either, honestly.
Which one of you is a liar, Gavin or Xavier Woods? He says they're going. Gavin says not in the whole decade.
I would bet not in the whole decade, but it's tough to get there. I think the other side would be just saying, hey, look, one out of 16 of the NFC teams makes it to the Super Bowl, but there's probably going to be six or seven different representatives from the NFC in the decade that make it to the Super Bowl. Some teams will repeat, but it's the NFC is pretty open. We don't, as far as I can tell, we don't have Tom Brady and Peyton Manning in our conference. So it can be open.
Don't even have Mahomes and Jackson.
But, man, I hate this because I know the players try. I know they try hard, even though, honest to God, they did not try their hardest this year, which is really weird in a professional sport. But I truly believe that they did not try their hardest to play the best football that they could play this year. Is I just don't know how much motivation comes from the Dallas Cowboys organization to be a champion.
No, yeah, that leadership tone is set at the top. You know, I think any organization that decided they could give Jalen Smith a massive, lucrative, long-term contract just exposes so many flaws in the way that they were evaluating things and making decisions. I don't know if you got to go even beyond that. And apparently, late in the season, Jalen Smith's playing time became such a big divisive factor between coaches that they got in a big fight about it, and the linebackers coach had to go away for like 2 weeks. Holy cow. All right, it is the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan. Linebacker, not really one of the Cowboys' biggest needs, but let's talk about what their needs are.
Maybe it's not.
As we go into the 2020 offseason. And yeah, that I guess that's a good starting point, you know, that the offseason needs for the Cowboys and where is linebacker. I think if one was staring you in the face, you could be honest with yourself and say, dude, we're going to play Jalen at strong side or a nickel, blitzing situations, but if we have an opportunity to get a guy who could really cover and blow plays up and stay off blocks, how can your middle linebacker not be able to stay off blocks or cover and have you have a winning defense? I don't see how it's possible.
If something insane happened, like if you watched the title game last night, if Clemson's Isaiah Simmons somehow made it to 17, you'd be making a giant mistake not to pick him. So I'd pick him and I'd say, we're going to figure it out. Our job is to put great players on the field. I just picked us one. We'll figure it out.
Okay, so where I'm at with Cowboys needs, and I'd be happy with a linebacker. I think you're looking for transcendent type players no matter what position that they play every time. Could this guy be a Hall of Famer? We're stupid if we don't take him. With the Cowboys, I think in a perfect world, I think it could go defensive line. Give me a tackle. Give me another end. I don't think Malik Collins or Michael Bennett is coming back. I don't think Robert Quinn is coming back. So I think it's Tank and then a bunch of, you know, you're talking jobbers. You're talking roster fill. And there's some potential with Dorrance Armstrong, right? There's a little bit of potential here and there. But I think defensive line is the only clear need. Because in a year where you got to go for it as the cap is coming for you, you re-sign your corner, you re-sign your wide receiver, drafting there would be redundant. The way to make a huge impact, fix your linebacking situation a little bit more. Just keep blocks off of him and stop the running right up the middle. I think it's a massive blinking sign. It's not even close. Defensive line's the way to go for me, Jeff.
Yeah, I think so. For me, we marry your two ideas. Okay. Where I'm looking for a transcendent player, and I'll even lower that bar down to I am looking for the absolute best talent that's available to me. So you get to the 17th pick in the draft and you look up and you go, okay, where are our defensive linemen and where are our secondary players? If there's a linebacker that you love, okay. If there's a wide receiver that you love, maybe. But I think, yeah, you look at the D tackles, you look at the pass rushers, and then you look at the players in the secondary. Because on defensive line, gosh, or secondary, I think that's the way it'll end up, is first and second round will be either a D-tackle or a D-end and either a safety or a corner. And you just kind of let it fall the way that it will. However this thing starts moving, when it gets down to us, or maybe we get wild, want to go up.
Have we seen the front office kind of wait until the corners are gone before they draft new ones? So I think if you bring back Byron, you have three.
Yes, you have three. When they brought in Cheeto and Jordan Lewis and Xavier Woods,
they had just let Carr and Claiborne go.
Okay, so they waited until the moment of?
Yeah.
Okay.
But at three technique defensive tackle, they had Malik and drafted Hill. So there's two different things there. Okay.
He doesn't count. We're keeping our head on a swivel for a three technique.
I just look at free agency, and I think if they don't let Byron or Amari walk, if they're keeping those guys, as fun as it is to talk about drafting a corner or a wide receiver because those are premium positions, I just think that safety or defensive line is, you know, lining up with how these contracts are coming up to free agency.
Yeah, I also just think if we're going to go through kind of what is being put out there by Will McClay in San Antonio, that this draft might be really concentrated on defense.
Yeah.
Is that if
probably
we,
should be.
If we feel like pretty much everything's set on offense except for we got to pay the quarterback and most likely we have to pay a wide receiver, but everything else is pretty much set, and we're going to go to almost a whole new defensive scheme, then we have to put assets into that that can make it a successful transition into a whole defensive different defensive scheme.
Yeah, and maybe I think that's why some of the names to keep in mind, if you want to dismiss corner, which I don't mind doing that, then I think the first two names that pop into my head as a Cowboy fan, if you want to Google them up and watch them play a little bit, would be Grant Delpit, LSU safety, Xavier McKinney, Alabama safety, and Javon Kinlaw, the South Carolina defensive tackle. Because I think where you're picking, those are likely the best players available at the need positions. And we'll sort through these defensive ends. We'll find these defensive ends and these pass rushers. Heck, if they are going to move to a 3-4, it's not much different. But maybe that opens the door to some of the pass rushers that normally they would be like, oh, I don't know, he's 5 pounds too light. Maybe that opens a door to a couple of brand new names.
That's what was so frustrating with what Will McClay said about Tank today. That he could go to the 3-4 and disrupt fine.
He could.
It's like, yeah, of course he could. But when they took Taco instead of TJ Watt,
right,
he didn't say those things. Maybe it's lessons. I don't think it's just now Will McClay is learning that lesson.
I don't either. No, I don't either. Okay. I think that's part of it. That's part of what Will McClay, what his job was. It was, all right, talk to the coaches, figure out what they want, put
cover
this thing
for
in
their
order.
Stupidity.
Right. And then when those coaches, that's the maddening part.
Yeah.
Because I'm fairly certain the way it works for the Cowboys is everything is set, then the coaches watch tape, then it gets moved around. Where it's like, hey, thanks for all of your work. I know you guys have been traveling the country and interviewing and talking to people's family, friends, and everybody they've known their entire lives. You know everything about them as players, and you've told us how good they are. But now I watched, and we're going to need to move some guys. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm drafting them for you.
That is very unfortunate. Okay, coming up next, it's time for Jeff to deliver a segment. What do you have in mind, sir?
Stock up, stock down from the College Football Championship. It's next.
Thank you very much, Lucius Alexander. It is the G-Bag Nation. Time for Jeff to take over, and here he is, Kavanaugh.
All right, I found something really exciting today, which is Cristiano Ronaldo's fitness secrets. He's 34, I'm 35, we're both elite athletes, so I'm thinking that I can look just like him as soon as I incorporate some of these things.
That's got to be roids and HGH by now. I mean, he's playing a 27-year-old.
We'll see. I'll tell you when we get there. But first, there's much more important things after the College Football Championship. Stock up and stock down for some of the guys that played in that game. The first stock up. Mike, would you like to take a guess? Whose stock went up in that game?
Well, Joe Burrow can't go up anymore. He's number one, but
it's number one. Okay. Yes, Joe Burrow. Not that you can go past the number one overall pick, but you can guarantee you'll be the number one overall pick, I guess.
I'm going to go with another person, but he's not draftable yet. And that was the wide receiver at LSU that just kept catching bomb after bomb, it felt like.
Jamar
making
Chase.
Super fast. Okay.
He just won the Blitnikoff. He just caught 100 balls for 1,500 yards and 18 touchdowns.
Is he on the list? He can't be drafted yet.
He can't be drafted, so he's not on the list. We're only counting real people.
Can number 22, the running back for LSU, be drafted?
Clyde Edwards-Helaire? He absolutely
can. Son of a gun. That dude has the thighs and the butt on him, and you can't get him down to the ground without four people tackling him.
He is one of the guys that counts as a stock up. He ran for 110 yards, had another 54 receiving, and I have a player comp for him, which my buddy Justice Moscato on Twitter was like, I have a player comp, but I'm not going to share it because I don't want to hear what you guys have to say. And when I read his words, I was like, okay, we have the same comp here because it's Ray Rice. That's who he plays like. And you don't want to say that name because it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. But as far as football playing, yeah, the LSU running back to me looks exactly like Ray Rice when he was good at football before he got old and hit people.
You got to let's
so
see.
Stock up. Joe Burrow is the first one because he destroyed the number one defense in the country, which to me solidifies that's the best offensive team in college football history.
The I don't know if this will be number two. The LSU defensive end that kept kind of disrupting Trevor Lawrence.
Kalaivon Chaisson. Let me see if he's on the list that I have from Bleacher Report. If he's not, he should be because he did have a really good game. And to me, they didn't put him on there, but I agree with you. I think that teams are going to look at that performance and say, you took the guy that last year was a lock for he's the number one pick forever, and he's unstoppable, and he's taken down Bama, and he's a national champion as a freshman, and he looked rattled, and it was mostly because of Kalaivon Chaisson.
Okay, and now I'll go with, you said stock down?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with a guy who didn't have a good game to what I've seen him do in this season when I watched some Clemson football. And that was the running back for Clemson.
Travis Etienne. See, I thought he played pretty well.
Okay.
His stats weren't great.
It was just because I've seen him just, like, be uncatchable. And there were a couple times where, I think it was number nine, like, that would, he would do something and he wasn't blocked. And, like, look, if this guy doesn't tackle him, it's going to be a 70-yard touchdown. Nobody's catching him if,
Etienne over the season, I think he averaged, like, 8 or 9 yards a carry, something stupid like that. And they didn't really get to run the ball because they were behind a lot. But I do think that he will be picked before Edwards-Helaire, and they're both going to be good NFL running backs.
Stock down is the guy that was covering the LSU wide receiver that kept catching deep balls.
A.J. Terrell. Yes, he is a junior. He has not declared for the draft yet, I don't think, or maybe he has, but he was considered a traits guy that could go into the draft and then go to the combine and be maybe even a late first-round pick. And covering Ja'Marr Chase did not go the way that you would like it to. But there's also a little bit of unfairness here where they're like, you never want to overreact to one game, but since it's the only contest, evaluators can check him against what looks like NFL talent. You have to put more weight on this performance. They played Alabama last year. He had a pick six on Tua.
Yeah.
This is not the first time he's played NFL players, but yes, Ja'Marr Chase tore him up.
Well, I'll say stock down, and he didn't have a good game. He didn't have a horrible game, but I will say Trevor Lawrence, they're going to put in stock down.
They won't because he's not draft eligible. Stupid.
Oh, sorry. I keep forgetting that the draft eligible thing is only on this.
They go stock down on Grant Delpit, which I disagree. I would say stock kind of the same, where you're like, yeah, I saw all of his positives, and I also saw his negatives.
Ultimately, nobody had a game where it was like, oh, we can't take him where we thought he might be. Just because of this one game.
Except maybe A.J. Terrell. Patrick Queen, LSU linebacker.
I thought 47 was good until he got ejected.
Yeah, he played pretty well. I think he had a sack and then a nice targeting.
Is he draftable?
I'll have to check. I haven't seen his name in mock drafts or anything, so I'll have to go back and look. But okay. Go ahead.
Do you agree that it should be an ejection when you do what he did? Which is, he led with the helmet.
It's weird because I think it should be a judgment call.
Yeah.
Like, did you try to hurt a guy or were you trying to make a football play? Because I think he was trying to make a football play, but they want you to not lower the crown of your helmet, which I agree with.
And here's what's tough. I know Clemson fans and football fans were upset on Twitter, and I totally get it because it's very tough for a 21 or 22-year-old, I'm just assuming his age, gets kicked out of the national championship game. But it was just 10 or 11 days ago, or I guess 2 weeks ago now, that Clemson somewhat won a football game because they ejected an Ohio State player for sacking Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it did have Clemson benefited from this rule to get to the national championship game. And then I know it wasn't the deciding factor, but it did hurt Clemson probably overall later in the game that they didn't have one of their starting there. It seemed like their one starting linebacker, right? Because they only played one linebacker pretty much.
Yeah, basically. Stock up for Isaiah Simmons. Clemson's linebacker / safety, who I'm sure you noticed at least early in the game when he had a sack and he's flying all over the place and he's tackling everybody.
Was the 77 for, I believe, LSU offensive tackle, is he considered good? Because he got out on one of those screen plays and made a nice play where he got out, and he just looked really athletic as an offensive tackle.
Their left tackle, they actually said stock down LSU offensive line because they won the Joe Moore Award. But I tell you what, I thought they played pretty well.
I guess early on in the game they didn't.
Yeah.
But they were sending blitzes and stuff. They were, and I thought the Clemson defensive coaching staff, after one quarter, I thought, wow, this defensive staff for Clemson, and I don't know
Venables,
them, but I was just like, holy cow, this is pretty awesome what they're doing to this offense, who just did whatever they wanted against Alabama, did whatever they want. I guess OU stinks at defense, I get it, but I did watch the Alabama game, and LSU could do almost whatever they wanted against Alabama, and eventually, once the second quarter kind of got going, then they were able to do whatever they wanted.
Man, if Clemson could have showed up offensively, maybe they would have had a chance. Cause remember when Kyler was at OU and Alabama, they just jumped on him because they weren't ready for that defense. Clemson had a chance to do that. If you can score your first couple of drives after stopping LSU, you've got a chance to run away from them.
Clemson did have
a
pick six that they dropped. I can't remember when in the game, but that would have really helped them. I think they were already losing at that point, so I want to say it was more like third quarter.
Final stock up is T. Higgins, the big wide receiver from Clemson, number 5. His receiving numbers weren't huge, but he was also robbed of a big touchdown catch on a BS offensive PI call.
I hear you.
And on his 36-yard run, when he ran through poor Christian Fulton, number 1 for LSU, when he was running down the left sideline, and you're like, this big old 6'4", 6'5 guy just trucked the corner, and he had a nice game, even though they got their butts kicked. Now, moving on to the more important thing. Cristiano Ronaldo and I'm going to implement all these steps, and here within, I'll say within 3 weeks, I'll be chiseled, and I'll be rolling up in here, and you guys will be like, holy cow.
You going gluten-free?
Look at this, dude. Well, I'm just going to do everything that Ronaldo does. I found his fitness secrets. Number
just
1.
Just do what rich people do and just have multiple surgeries to make you look it fit.
I've had multiple surgeries. But
no, like, you know, just get the fat sucked out of your body. Oh,
yeah. I did that once for my knee.
Just do a whole bunch of things like that.
Get a chest plate put
in. Yeah, you get like a rib get your bottom ribs taken out, so then you get really that V-looking shape.
Oh, I thought that was to help yourself in certain ways. I thought that was to get yourself
multiple benefits.
Yeah.
Ronaldo eats 6 small meals per day. We'll eliminate our breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Keeps the metabolism going.
We'll scatter it out 6 different ways, and we'll have 6 meals per day.
That's kind of the soda program. Kind of, not exactly.
Ronaldo sees chicken as a magical food, which means that the Popeyes that I had on my way in lines up perfectly with my new diet plan.
Did you get the grilled chicken? Because I'm pretty sure he's saying his body is not by fried chicken. It's probably by grilled chicken.
Well, I got a 3-piece of fried chicken, mild, and I asked for dark, and they gave me white meat, and I thought about turning around to make them correct it, but then I realized where I'd gotten it from, and I was like, I don't have another hour and a half. So I just ate it, and I don't know why people pretend that chicken breast is so delicious, especially when you get fried chicken. That is the worst piece of chicken.
Dries out a little bit too much.
Right, sure. There's a lot of meat. It is the most bland piece of chicken, and they gave me 2 breasts and a wing. And I tell you, the wing at fast food places has about as much meat as my pinky nail. Like, there is no meat.
Those chickens get no hormones. Yeah, that's all bone and skin right there.
What's the driest piece?
The breast.
Typically. I agree. That's why I think you have to, like, when you're at home, if you kind of pound it out and flatten it a little bit more,
pounding it out,
then that helps it out.
I think you got to be obsessed with the temperature. Get it yanked.
Also, you know, it makes it also
juicier. I'm so
scared
of chicken, so I won't
dipping
do that.
It in barbecue sauce or ketchup
there you
or whatever.
Go.
Yeah, but I paid for this chicken. It should taste good. Takes 5 90-minute naps per day. Now, my question about this is, because that's 90, so that's an hour and a half times 5, that's 5, 6, 7.5 hours. Is he also sleeping at night? Is Ronaldo sleeping 16 hours a day?
I don't know.
Or are we just taking naps?
That's just weird. Maybe he is an alien.
I'm going to have to shoot him an email to get clarification on that one. Because if I need to sleep 16 hours a day, I think at the end of your life, you might look back and be like, man, I probably missed some stuff. But in the moment, you'll probably be really happy.
Man, you can fall asleep so quickly if you're doing that. I mean, it takes me an hour and a half just to fall asleep.
Yeah.
For real, though.
I can fall asleep fast for a nap, but not to go to sleep. It's really weird.
All right.
He has breakfasts of cheese, ham, yogurt, and avocado toast. I'm going to skip the avocado toast.
That sounds healthy, though. That sounds high performance.
He eats whole grain, fresh fruit, and fish, never frozen. Has salad with most meals, and no red meat or fizzy drinks. So I am going to eliminate about half of these, but I think that I'll get incredible results and I'll be chiseled by next Thursday.
Yeah, you know, just have DNA that's touched by God himself.
Mine is.
And maybe.
Yeah.
Okay, when we come back, it's time for what's on 1053thefan.com. A lot of good stuff in here, including news on the national champions and their passing game coordinator. Is he going pro after all? It's next in the nation.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.